There's so much power to meditation. I can talk hours and hours and hours about it, but it all starts with those five crucial steps to teach you how to detach.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Terry Sidhu is a meditation specialist and author of Meditate, Breathe Into Meditation, and Awaken Your Potential. Growing up in a Sikh household, Terry Sidhu learned how to meditate when he was around 9 years old. He learned how to harness the power of his thoughts and consciously create his life. As a meditation coach, he's helped hundreds of people manage their mental health, cultivate healthy relationships, launch businesses, start careers, and explore their spirituality. Terry Sidhu, I am so happy to have you, meditation teacher and author, right? Yeah. And you help high performers clear mental health issues and develop the number one daily habit of billionaires, icons, and world-class performers. I guess that's meditation. Is that what the number one?
Yes. It's getting them to think beyond the boxes that they've constructed themselves into. It's getting them to open up their minds, getting them to think as creators, as opposed to thinking themselves as like CEOs or, you know, entrepreneurs or business people, to get them to think more as their true essence of who they are.
Well, Terry, so tell us, how did you become a meditation specialist?
That's a great way to put it, a meditation specialist. I think I prefer that than anything else. So when I was about 9 years old, I grew up in a Sikh household. So meditation was everywhere, at the Gurdwara, which is the temple, in the artwork, in the text, everything that I was learning, meditation. And I never really took to it until I was about 9 years old. So I was bullied a lot at school. And I remember coming home to my mom, and I was telling her all this stuff about how I just, you know, didn't like school and I didn't like life. And she always kept saying to me, because whenever I started talking, it happens in my life now, where I just keep just regurgitating without breathing. And she would say, like, Saleh, which in Punjabi means take a breath. And then so I started asking her, I was like, well, why do I need to take a breath? Why do I need to start breathing? And that's when she started introducing me to all these ancient scriptures, all these translated passages. She said, if you want to know why, then start looking for clues in all of these. And that's how it started. I started reading all these ancient scriptures and she started introducing me to meditation, teaching me the basic steps. Mm-hmm. And I took to it really well. I loved it. I started getting all these answers in my life, in my world. My inner world seemed truer to me than the outer one. It was free. Like, in my mind, I could scream as loud as I want and swear and do everything that I couldn't do in the real world or in the present world.
Yeah.
And that was a freeing experience for me. It became my little sanctuary. It became my space for me to be true to who I am. And then so I grew up meditating, and then I stopped for a little bit once, you know, I got into my teen years and, you know, the world started seeing me in a different way. I started getting accepted into friend groups. I grew taller, lost the puppy fat, teeth straightened out, you know, I became part of the material world. And then how I started teaching meditation, got into it, was, so when I moved to Canada, I was about 25 years old, and I decided I wanted to start a life coaching practice. I left the corporate world and I wanted to use all these marketing tools that I had learned about. I thought if they could elevate small businesses into huge corporations, they surely can help people elevate their lives into fulfillment. You know, all marketing is, you know, researching data and looking at the external and internal environments. So I just flipped that onto someone. Like, you got your external world and your internal world. Are they in sync? Are they, you know, how can we counteract challenges? And so life coaching opened the door to helping people. And then my clients, out of nowhere, I remember it was a few years back, they started asking me about mental health. They're like, Terry, you know, I'm dealing with anxiety, because that wasn't my expertise. Mine was more life planning and supporting them move forward with their goals and whatnot. They're like, Terry, how do we deal with anxiety, stress, depression? I feel these things all the time. And it's great when we have our session. But after like a week or so, I start feeling and doubting myself and stuff, even though I have all the tools in place. I was like, oh, why don't you just meditate? Just add more meditation to your life. And some of them are like, well, what's meditation? And others are like, oh yeah, I use Headspace and I use these apps. And what I was learning was people don't meditate. Yeah. For me, my world, meditation was akin to sleep. Like, it was something we did at the temple. It was in my life for so many years. I presumed everyone meditated. I didn't realize that this wasn't a thing. And so as clients started asking me, I started sharing tips from my childhood. And I was always scared to share my tips from when I was a kid, because I learned from ancient Vedic scriptures and Vedic sciences and Old Testaments, and just reading religious books. That's how I learned meditation. So, because my work wasn't scientifically backed,
right,
I felt like I couldn't necessarily teach my work professionally. But then when I was learning about things like Headspace and what was out there in terms of mindfulness, I was like, oh, that's you haven't even started meditating yet. Mm-hmm. You've just scratched the surface. It's like, try this technique and try this technique. And then that's when it started scaling up, and meditation became the thing that I started doing more. And then psychiatrists and all sorts of people started referring their clients to me to teach them meditation. I remember a medicinal cannabis clinic asking me to start leading groups for individuals struggling with the psychoactive states. So I just started dipping my toe in all these different realms. The next thing you know, I became known as this meditation guy in Vancouver. And it just grew and grew from there, really.
I think that's amazing that you're meditating as a kid. Mm-hmm. And because you're right. A lot of people, well, at least in the United States, I mean, meditation is not an everyday thing that we do. Most of us don't really think of meditation. I think as we progress through the years, it is becoming a little bit more acceptable and mm-hmm. Like maybe the new normal eventually will be meditation. But yeah, I wasn't meditating when I was 9, 10, 11 years old. And I can't even, what a blessing to start that young, Terry. Oh my gosh.
I was lucky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how then, what is the biggest benefit in meditating?
The biggest benefit from meditating, I would say, is accepting your truth. I think that's the key to it, because it makes the experience of life, the present moment, this thing that we're experiencing now, seem like the most simplest, straightforward thing ever. It makes it small but not insignificant. And I say small because you start realizing in meditation that the present moment is all that exists with your body. Because the moment you close your eyes, you have access to a bigger world, to very different worlds.
Right.
Like, if I asked you to think of a memory, your physical body is not going to that memory. You're going as something else. Uh-huh. And which is what we can refer to as consciousness, or the higher self, or the third eye, or the inner self, or the governing self. There's so many new age words for it.
Right.
And if I ask you to think of like a red lemon, now you think going into a different direction. You're going into more of a future state. You're going into a creator state, whereby you can think of an idea and bring it to life. Yeah. This present moment is basically the playbook, and it's creation in action. We are here to experience whatever we are creating. Like, if you look around you, everything is a creation. There's nothing that you can experience in the physical world that hasn't been created in some form or fashion. Something plus something else or some other things had to come together to create everything we experience in this world. And what meditation does is it just makes life, oh, I just got to be here. And if I want to change it, and if I want to elevate it, I just got to create it. Mm-hmm. It puts you in the creator seat. You start seeing yourself as a creator. Mm-hmm. And then once you've kind of got that aspect down, then you can start meditating towards, okay, if I'm a creator, but what's the creator of me as mm-hmm. consciousness, as an entity, not as a body? Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go into those spiritual realms and stuff. But that will go into an esoteric realm a little bit later, I'm sure.
Yeah. So because I remember when you were talking about your experience as a young child, and you mentioned that you could scream and say all the things that you probably wouldn't say, like, out loud, that you could do that safely within yourself. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Is that part of you accepting your truth, like accepting how you feel in the moment, accepting without judgment, just kind of letting yourself be internally?
Learning to listen to yourself. I was just having this conversation with a client yesterday, and he was asking, well, you know, how can I be more present in the world? How can I be less self? How can I judge myself less? How can I be more self-accepting and things like that? I was like, well, you got to get comfortable listening to your truth. And that's what I started doing at 9 years old. That's all it was. It wasn't like, you know, I mean, there was times where I'd go into these heightened states of awareness and be like, whoa, Krishna just take me to this whole world and, you know, these wonderful imaginative stories. Right. But ultimately, all I was doing was, let me listen to myself first. What am I thinking? What am I feeling? And then eventually I got so comfortable listening to my own thoughts and feelings in my own mind, not observing them yet, just actually paying attention to what I think and feel. Mm. I used to do this thing where I used to sit and meditate in the dark. And then I would start whispering my thoughts and feelings and getting comfortable hearing my voice saying the things that I felt and thought. Yeah. And then eventually I would start saying them a little louder. Maybe I'd start writing them or drawing them and start expressing my truth in alternative ways, which were safe to do so. Because let's face it, the world can be a harsh place when you start expressing yourself. But I started to find out, I started like creating my own language. I just remember being so expressive and so open with who I was in a way that felt true to who I am. And as a result, I was able to develop that self-acceptance, that self-confidence. And I think that's what led me to kind of stop meditating when I was about 16, because I think aside from the physical side of me changing, the mentality that I had started to change too. I was like, you know what? I'm going to relinquish myself to this world because I know now how to restore myself. I know what my truth is. So I can play in the realm of illusion because I know how to bring myself back to truth. Right. And that all came down to, again, taking my time to express myself. I do this tantric class where it's an empowerment class where I teach people essentially how to kind of bring themselves out into the world and present themselves physically. And what we do is we start dancing in the dark, then we start dancing with our shadows, then we start dancing in the light, then we start introducing a mirror, then we start bringing a camera, because now we're in a digital age where cameras are everywhere. Yeah. And then we slowly bring them into, and we unify the expression. So how freely you can dance in the dark, you've got to dance just as freely into the next stage of being in light, and then dance at the next stage of light, that being reflected back at you with the mirror. And now you're sending that signal out and beaming it to the world. And if you can create the same expression from how you can exist within your own darkness, within your own isolation or sanctuary, all the way through to existing in the light in the same way, you've struck gold. You can express yourself freely everywhere. And you are true essence in every aspect of your life. You are now living true to who you are in your being without fear and judgment.
Wow. Okay. So here's the question, Terry, because like when you say listen to your thoughts, what about all those crazy thoughts that are like abusive, that are telling you you're worthless and you're stupid, or, you know, how, so when you say listen to them, you're not believing them.
No, your meditation is essentially, and this is what I understood about meditation, is when you're sitting in meditation, you are a creator experiencing creation. Yeah. So anything from whether you're experiencing anything in the physical world, like with your five physical senses, through to any thoughts from memory, any feelings from memory, through to any kind of ideas and anything that you can come up with, you have to see everything as a creation that is separate from yourself. For example, if you're having anxious thoughts, anxiety, that, or those anxious thoughts have been created. So you existing as a creator, as an entity within your own mind, are questioning that creation. Well, how did this creation come to be? Mm. Where did this creation come from? Mm. You know, and then you start realizing, well, if anxiety is created, well, how can I create calm? Mm. If fear is created, how can I create courage?
Yeah.
You know, if panic is created, how can I create a sense of control?
Right.
Okay. And then you start seeing everything as a creation. Therefore, you start realizing that you can also create.
Yeah, that's, and then you balance that's it out. So powerful. I mean, it takes you from this place of powerlessness mm-hmm. to a place of power. Because, yeah, I know if I've created these negative thoughts, how can I create thoughts that will support me rather than harm me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, you see everything like, okay, like this cup, you know, there's me and there's this cup.
Yeah.
When you're in meditation, there's you and there's your thought.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, and all you're doing is like, what the hell is this? What, let me look inside of it. What's around it? You know? Yeah. And the only thing you need to train to do that is the ability to detach.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that, and that's where you start using breath. And that's where I introduce the 5-step meditation process. And people think I teach meditation, which technically I do, but more accurately, I educate people on how to detach so they can meditate. You know, it's not like, for example, like teaching meditation, it's like, say if I'm teaching sleep, I can't teach you necessarily how to sleep. I can only teach you how to get to sleep and start sleeping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So meditation is very similar. I can only get you to start meditating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I introduce 5 steps.
Well, Terry, can you talk a little bit about the 5 steps?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
So it starts with breathing. The first thing you want to do in your meditation, no matter where you begin, is just get a sense of control. And breathing is where you start. Inhale and exhale through your nose. And I call it engaging your control breath or your control state of being. Just like science, do you know we've all done those science experiments where in school where you're planting all these seeds, but you have the control where you give it the light, you give it the soil, the water, but then in another one you take the light away or you take this, you know? Yeah. So what we're essentially doing, we are developing that control state by breathing. So consciously inhaling and exhaling through our nose. By doing so, no matter what we experience in our mind, in our meditation, we know that we have this control state that we can engage and return to. Step one, breathing. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do it with me, just mm-hmm. inhale and exhale through your nose. Just close your eyes and again, inhale and exhale. You can open your eyes. Was that easy to do?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel a little bit calmer, a little shift, and like you just feel that sense of control just by breathing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's step one. So now you know how to return to a state of control and clarity, which means you can now go a little bit deeper into your mind without fear, because you're like, oh, I've got step one. And this is how I help people clear PTSD, childhood trauma, things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Step two, position. So you got to remember, when you're sitting in meditation, the last thing you want is your body to cause any sort of tension. The idea is when you sit in meditation, you are sitting in that state to consciously process and deal with whatever you're dealing with, and to overcome or restore whatever your tension for your meditation is. Your body needs to be in a comfortable position to be able to do so. And by breathing consciously, you can actually listen to your body. And be like, oh, you know, I need to adjust my legs, otherwise my foot's going to sleep in 2 minutes. I need to adjust the way. And the main component of a meditation position is basically ensure that your spine is straight and self-supported. Because if it's leaning back on a chair or if it's lying flat, you're going to end up falling asleep and going into rest. This just keeps you conscious.
Yes.
Right?
So basically, you often fall asleep.
Yeah. So unconscious processing, conscious processing, unconscious processing, conscious processing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is. You want to, and I always say, and I've put it in the book in a simple manner as well. And there's a chapter on all of these steps. And positioning is just like, imagine yourself sitting upright, self-supported on a cloud where it's just easy to mm-hmm. sit in. Use as many pillows as you want. Use a chair. Like, don't worry about sitting in lotus position or getting into a really deep right. meditation position like you see in the media. You can meditate standing up. You can meditate. You can even meditate lying down, but I wouldn't recommend it because you'll fall asleep. But ideally, just get into a comfortable seated position so you can think and sit. So breathe, listen to your body, get into a good position.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third step is what most mainstream meditation practices forget, neglect, or don't even know to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is you now activating your meditative state, which is basically once you're in control and you're comfortable and in position, get ready And then you basically roll your eyes up subtly and gently towards your, the center of your mind. Hmm. It's almost like it's at the beginning of your meditation practice, it's going to feel like a ritual. As you deepen your meditation practice, you're going to start realizing how effective that movement is. Because essentially what you're doing is you're putting the body on standby and you're handing conscious awareness over from your body and to the version of you that sits within your own mind. Again, that version of yourself, the higher self, the governing self, the inner self, or whatever. So breathe for the position and then lock into your meditation. That's your activation process. And then step four, you're effectively meditating. So meditation. So what you do, you just keep repeating those four steps. And when in your meditation, you're essentially dealing with whatever you want to deal with. However, let's say you breathe position, you lock into your meditation, you're meditating for like a point, fifth of a second, and then you hear something and you're distracted.
Yes.
That's okay. You return back to breath, return to control, breathe, and with conscious control, that simple inhale and exhale through your nose. And then you reposition your body if you need to, because sometimes it could be the body that's causing the tension or distraction, like, ah, my feet, like, forget about it. Don't try to forget about it. Adjust. Adjust. So you're comfortable. And then lock back into your meditation and regain your meditation practice. And then maybe this time you'll hold a meditative state for like a second. And now you've just gone from 0.5, half a second to a second. And you've just increased your ability to meditate by 100% basically. And you keep training and you keep cycling through these steps over and over and over again. For example, if we're meditating to restore our mental health and we're dealing with a lot of anxiety, we keep cycling through this meditative cycle in one meditation sitting. So now one meditation sitting isn't like sitting for an hour in meditation and trying to hold that meditative state for an hour. Right. You're essentially repeating this cycle for the entire hour. So each time increasing that meditative state, that step four. So breathe, position, lock, meditate, breathe, position, lock, meditate. And you keep doing that until you clear the conscious clutter, until you clear the thing that you've dealt with, until you realize, oh, I'm in control. I can beat this. Right. You know, I can put my breath ahead of my anxiety. I can get control and clarity ahead of my fears. I can put myself, my true self, ahead of anything I'm experiencing in life. And once you've regained that control and that level of clarity that you require to counteract the challenges that you're dealing with in life, step five, integrate. That's that moment of mindfulness after you meditate and just before you awaken, a little wedge whereby you just break your meditation physically, like you can move your position or whatever, and just keep your eyes closed and you can say a little prayer, or you can just think about, okay, I'm about to awaken into the present world. I'm about to reconnect with my physical present life. What do I need to do next? What do I need to achieve? Now I've got the state of mind that I need. What can I accomplish? Do I need to eat? Do I need to sleep? Do I need to send an email? Do I need to make a phone call? What action can I take? And then you awaken and you take said action and away you go with the mindset that you needed, as opposed to dealing with the trying to move forward with the fear that you started with.
So Terry, I love the five steps. This is great. I think the step that I think most people will struggle with is step four. So when you're in that state of meditation, what is... You have all this stuff happening in your head. Is that okay? Because I think, I know when I first started meditating, I was under the assumption that my mind is supposed to be blank.
And oh, no.
Like this euphoric state where it's just, oh, I'm not thinking of anything. It just feels good all throughout my body. But then that's when I started, I was like, oh, I have all these thoughts. I'm getting distracted. And how do you manage that? Or do you manage it? Is that supposed to...
You build into that. You got to remember, most people's experience of meditation... I've been meditating since 9 years old, so I figured how to get to those states. It took me time to get there, but I got there. Mm-hmm. And the only way one can get there is by learning to detach. And that's essentially what you're doing by repeating these steps over and over and over again. Once you're able to... Think of it like this. You're swiping through your thoughts until you land on one that excites you or enlightens you. Like, huh? Like for it's a very elaborate example. Let's say you're repeating those steps. Oh, I don't want to be dealing with this direction. I'll go back to breath, reposition my body if I need to. I'm locking back in and I'm meditating. Oh, then you start thinking about, you know, a problem in your past. I don't want to be dealing with that. Go back to breath, reposition your body if you need to, lock back into your meditation. Oh, now I'm thinking about washing the dishes. Don't want to be dealing with that. And you repeat the cycle until you land on something like, whoa, oh yeah, I didn't think of that. What about this idea? And then you dive in and you dive into it and you connect to it and you explore it and you learn it. And then once you're ready to come out, repeat, go back to breath, and then decide, do you want to integrate the idea and come back and act, work on it and work on that creation that you developed in your mind? Or do you want to move beyond it?
Oh,
and so you can consciously choose what thoughts you want to enter and exit from. Mm-hmm. That's where you begin. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to those enlightened transcendental states, you just got to keep letting everything go. Yeah. You can get the cure for cancer in your mind, but you got to be willing to let that go if you want to experience transcendence. Mm-hmm. You could get the idea for world peace in your mind, but are you willing to let that go to achieve transcendence and enlightenment? I mean, that's all it is. You are just detaching until you can get to a point where you're like, holy hell, I figured out the answer. I know what I need to do. Mm-hmm. But you can go even deeper than that. That's the power of meditation. You simply detach your way to wherever you want to go. It's right. Not necessarily stopping your thoughts,
mm-hmm.
because what meditation is giving you the ability to stop whatever you're dealing with so that you can move higher into a heightened realm of awareness, into a higher knowledge. Like if you're experiencing, like, people got this mistake of experiencing nothing or shutting down your mind or shutting down your thoughts.
Yeah.
That's not the case. That's essentially where when you're able to sit in that stillness, that's where your meditation can begin, because you can decide which direction you can go.
Mm-hmm.
We've already established that you can't physically take your body to the past and you can't physically take your body to the future. But in your mind, as whatever you exist as within, can.
Right. Yeah.
But what if you found other places?
Right.
It's just the beginning.
Okay, I'm so glad that you explained it that way. My hair is doing all kinds of crazy things. But I'm so happy you explained, because I've done that before, and I didn't know if that's what I was supposed to be doing. But you just kind of find a thought that makes me feel good, and I just kind of dive into that thought. And I think now that I think about it, with the way that you've explained it, I've meditated where I've had ideas come to me, and I think it's by doing that, right? There's something that comes to mind, and then I just start to explore it. So that idea of like swiping through thoughts, nope, like repeating the steps, breathing, mm-hmm. getting into a good position, until you find that one thought that really mm-hmm. kind of excites you.
Yeah. I remember when I used to teach kids, I used to, because kids, obviously, you got to present it in a very elaborate story.
Yeah.
So I used to teach kids, it's like, think of there's all these millions of different gods and deities and superheroes and powers in your mind.
Yeah.
What you're doing in meditation, you're swiping through each one. Do you want the power to be able to draw? Do you want the power to be able to grow? Do you want the power to be able to do? And you think about what that looks like and create a whole character around it. And when you mm-hmm. found it, integrate it and go be the character.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Teaching the kids is really exciting and really fun for me, because their imaginations are so wild.
Yeah.
And meditation is such an educational tool too. I remember teaching this one class where I was asked, and the one thing, the key to teaching kids meditation is asking them what they want to learn,
mm.
which is what we don't do for kids. I find shocking. It's like, I don't remember, there was not one point, I think it was telling us like 16, 17, where the first time I had a choice in what I could learn about in education, and even then it was limited to a list of what they provided.
Yeah.
But I started asking, like, you know, 5 to 9 year olds, like, what do you want to learn? And they're saying things like, I want to learn about spiders, I want to learn about leaves and whatever, like just random things about the world. I was like, okay, when you go into your meditation, I'm going to teach you a powerful thing that can help you think like a leaf or think like a spider. If you are a spider, where would you hide? So I'll get them to sit in meditation like this, and in their minds to think of being a spider, like to embody the life of a spider, or whatever they want to learn. And in their minds, they're thinking about where they would hide, because people were really big and, you know, the sun could be really hot, so they might want to get shade. And then once they finish the meditation, I'll be like, right, go find a spider. And within minutes, they found one. Because they knew where to look and where to find and seek answers or seek. But it was amazing. Like, that's why I'm so passionate about meditation, because it's transformed my experience of life. I don't fear much. I don't judge myself. I was every time I go to events and everyone's like, how can we be more like you? And I was like, read my bloody book, because I just meditate. That's all I do. I said, there's no special power. There's no difference between me and anyone else. It's just that I figured out what my body means and what the present life is all about for me.
So, Terry, for how long should we be meditating?
Until you found something that will help you counteract the challenges in your life. It may take you 5 minutes to restore your mind. It may take you 5 hours. Mm-hmm. You stay like there's different ways. Like if you're meditating to restore your mental health, for example, you keep meditating until you, like, for example, if you're dealing with anxiety, you meditate until you at least found calm, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't start your meditation feeling anxious and only to come out of your meditation still feeling anxious. Mm-hmm. And you take as long as you need. You don't need any specific amount of time. If you're really brand new to meditation, you find sitting in contemplation difficult, I'll just say, and this is what I offer a lot of, especially busy people, is when you have your morning beverage, like a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, just give yourself 60 seconds. Grab a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and go stand by your window for 60 seconds. You are inside you're on one side of the window and the world is on the other side of the window. That essentially is a meditation practice. You are observing the world outside, but you are very conscious that you are not part of what's happening outside because you're on the inside. Do that for 60 seconds, increase that time a little bit as you progress. And then eventually when you realize how easy that is, and you can do it in different parts of your life, when you're doing grocery shopping, you can just observe the experience. You know, when you're out and about driving and you can just observe and enjoy that you're realizing you're an individual and there's an experience happening around you. Carry that practice into a state of contemplation. You can close your eyes, or you can even do this, whereby if you catch yourself when you're in the present moment, when you're living your life, you should be here with your 5 physical senses. You should be able to pay attention to what you see, taste, touch, hear, smell, and so on, right? But if you're doing that and having thoughts and feelings at the same time, you're in 2 places at once. You're going to be consciously spread thin. So then all you have to do, if you don't worry about accessing heightened states of awareness and getting into states of stillness, just separate consciously, when you're in life, be in life. But when you've got a thought or feeling that you need to process, just close your eyes and sit with that thought and feeling. That's a meditation too. Mm-hmm. It's you consciously stepping out from the present moment so you can deal with the things that are not in the present moment consciously and give the things that are not in the present moment time and energy as well. Mm-hmm. Equal time and energy. So you're not trying to experience life and observe and understand life at the same time. Separate the two. Observe and understand consciously by closing your eyes and entering meditation. Experience life with your 5 physical senses. If you're not engaged by your 5 physical senses in your experience of life and you find yourself retreating within your own mind, that's like anxiety, depression, fear, all these things that keep us from living our lives, take it into meditation. You don't need to experience anything out here if that's where your head's at. Go into meditation and experience it fully. You're sad, experience it fully, but consciously. Mm-hmm. You know, don't try to live your life and be sad. Because otherwise you're going to end up creating experiences that are going to fuel your sadness.
Yeah.
Instead, you focus on your basic needs to keep your physical being healthy and present, like preservation of life. And we're going really esoteric, and these are deeper lessons. But the only rule, when in doubt, the only thing you need to do in life is just preserve your experience of it. Mm-hmm. And if what you're preserving doesn't feel good, then that's when you take it as an indication. Okay, I need to go back into my mind and actually process what I'm thinking and feeling, how it got to this state, how I can change it, and how I can create something alternative, you know, and then you can actually be more involved in moving your life forward. But it's going to be difficult without the conscious processing.
Whenever I'm feeling really anxious or upset, I will sit and purposely just like feel it, like wherever it is in my body, if it's my chest or my stomach, just feel it. And I found that after about, I don't know, maybe 90 seconds or so, it kind of just dissipates from my body. But if I try to just ignore it, which or repress it, or like, I found that it just gets worse and worse and worse. But if I just really sit with it and without judgment and just feel it within my body, the feeling will, and then it might come up again, like in an hour or whatever. But I've learned to really just listen to my body and not be scared to feel. I think a lot of us are just scared to feel the emotions, especially if they're not very pleasant emotions.
Yeah. I think it's because a lot of us, and one of the key things I try to present in the book is that when you are sitting in meditation, you're not existing as body. You just aren't. So whatever you're dealing with in your mind, understand that it's in there that you're dealing with it, because you're just sitting in meditation. You're doing nothing else. You're literally sitting in stillness, literally. Mm-hmm. so what's going on? Why are you so scared? You're sitting there doing nothing. What are you afraid of? There's no threat. There's no nothing. So figure that out inside. Mm-hmm. Something in there is causing you to create this panic and fear. Mm-hmm. There's something from within. Mm-hmm. One of the advanced lessons, so once people start getting into the basic practices of meditation, we start then helping them, and I offer it in the book as well. It's a section called Deepening Your Meditation. Mm-hmm. And in that section, I talk about taking awareness beyond the mind, understanding how to map out the mind, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I kind of liken the mind to like a room that has all these different areas that you can go to. There's a door to a library that is your past. There's a portal that can access all sorts of states of wonderful creation and imagination. And there's the mind that you're sitting in, that you just exist in, and allow, it's like your conscious control center, whereby you can access the past, you can access the future states of being, and you can access the data coming in through your physical senses and put them all together to create a reality that you can exist in. Mm-hmm. You just got to detach from whatever you're dealing with in your reality and realize that you can create a new one. Like, mm-hmm. I said, you can, if you're dealing with an anxious reality, you can create a calm one. Yeah. You just got to change. And this is, again, a very esoteric lesson, but you start learning. And that's what I started learning when I was about in my early 20s, when I had the language and the understanding of it, was to start seeing everything as data. Mm-hmm. Especially, and breath as a thing that exchanges data. Mm-hmm. When people are dealing with almost like life-threatening issues, or I would not say, and when I refer to life-threatening issues, I always think of like suicidal thoughts or depression, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I always say, I want you to think of it like this. With every inhale and exhale, there's an exchange of data happening. When you inhale, you are inhaling, like, first I talk about the preservation of life, which is, I want you to imagine that somewhere on this world, there is a plant, there is a leaf, there is something that needs your breath, that needs you to breathe to keep it alive. Mm-hmm. And it is alive to keep you alive. This is the cyclical connection we have of all life. This is how Earth works. It's this relationship between breath, this exchange of life. We inhale oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide. Plus, give or take a few elements. And the trees and the plants, they inhale our carbon dioxide and exhale oxygen. There's an exchange of data happening there. So whatever we think and feel within our mind, we are exhaling that out into the world, and the trees and the whatever are experiencing that data. Therefore, then their data and whatever they're experiencing, what state they're in, they're exhaling that and we're breathing that in. So as a result, we're communicating with our breath with the life and earth around us. So if you're not breathing consciously, and you're not consciously, you know, creating a healthy experience for yourself and for the world that you want to live in, can you imagine the messed up data that's constantly being exchanged? Mm-hmm. And if you're not breathing consciously, can you imagine that one tiny little plant that is alive because you're alive? Mm. Can you imagine what that little tiny thing is experiencing, or what that thing is, and how you're constantly stimulating this negative kind of cycle? And you can change so much about your life when you see the power of your breath. And if you can get your mind to a point where you can, this is what I want to create, this is what I want to develop in the world, and you breathe that out into the world, and the trees and the plants breathe that in, can you see how the world can start shaping and manifesting for you? Mm. Can you see, like, you've seen how a tree can just bend around a bridge to grow, right? You know, life is very similar that way too. You got to realize the power of just data. It's all just data. Everything in the past is just data. You got to, again, this is the esoteric stuff as well, where, remember, the subconscious mind, knowledge itself, is just data that is to be revived. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're thinking of a memory, you are consciously thinking of something that does not exist, that is essentially dead. Mm-hmm. But you are reviving that memory.
Right.
All you're doing with the five steps is you're pulling yourself out of it if it gets too much, and you're like, no, I don't need that memory right now. Mm-hmm. And then you put yourself back in control, and you basically take the life away from that memory. Mm-hmm. This is how you can start detaching from those deep-rooted issues. Mm-hmm. And then once you're able to detach successfully, you can then consciously go back to those issues and be like, right, let me study this thing, because you know how to get out of it when it gets too much. And then you start studying it, and you start realizing how to resolve it. You start realizing, how did this thing become created? You realize the source of that creation. And once you do, you're enlightened by it. You become enlightened because you know how it came to manifest in your life. Therefore, you resolve it and you can put it away in that storage unit and leave it there. And you can pull it out whenever you want. There's so much power to meditation. I can talk hours and hours and hours about it. But it all starts with those five crucial steps to teach you how to detach. That's just my way of teaching it. There are many, many ways to teach meditation. But I think it's time we move beyond mindfulness and beyond the present moment, because let's think of it like this. If the present moment is the source of contention for you, why would you want to be focusing on that? Because I used meditation to escape the present moment, because the present moment wasn't serving or enlightening me. I was like, the present moment sucks. I was literally asking, why do we need to breathe? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So my mom gave me an opportunity. She's like, you can learn to move away from it. She's not in those words, but she told me to look for clues. And my mind became this whole new world. That's where this world is, physical present life. It's very small and very minimal. It's very easy. Your body knows when you need to eat. Your body knows when you, like, all the answers are here for you. There's right. No mystery to life. There really isn't. It's just what we've created. And what we've created is so simple and straightforward. You know when you're hungry. You know what you need to do next. You know how to create it. Often the things that we think we have to do are often things or beliefs or rigid belief systems that we've constructed ourselves within. Mm-hmm. So what meditation does is break those free. Mm-hmm. So you realize, oh, I don't really need to do that. Like, for example, I sold a house and I moved to a new small town to start developing my meditation practice. And I decided to use a significant amount portion of the resources I earned from selling that home to invest in time developing new meditation practices, like spending good 6 months just doing nothing but meditating and writing and supporting myself and creating experiences and trying to learn how to actually make this work, because I believe in meditation. Yeah. Then I wrote the book and opened my meditation studio and whatnot. And when I started that, I really had to battle this whole thing. I was like, no, I should be saving this to buy a new house. I should be saving this to be doing this. I should be just holding on to these resources so that I do the right thing with them. But then I realized the right thing is not my right thing. The true thing that I want to do with these resources, I didn't construct that belief that I needed to do this, this, and this, and this. I know how to survive. I know when my body needs to be taken care of. I'm smart enough to preserve my experience of life. So why should I be doing everything that I've been taught to do when I could do everything that I know to be true and do those things instead? And as a result, I'm more fulfilled by my experience of life. I'm not submitting to any sense of ideology or material sense of truth. Mm-hmm. I'm resonating with the core of it, my truth, the truth that I feel.
Right.
And one thing about teaching meditation as well is I teach meditation. There's obviously things I can talk about in terms of what creation is, what the meaning of life is and stuff, but these are my revelations and my ideas. But the only reason why they're mine is because you can have this experience of transcendence, but ultimately, whatever data I have access to, like whatever in my subconscious mind, is the data I'll wrap around it. You know, five people can have the exact same experience of transcendence, but each five people can have an individual story. Mm-hmm. That's why you have Buddha, Krishna, Jesus, all these different types of individuals all encompassing the same thing. It's all just the data you have in your mind. And same with belief systems, why one person can be fulfilled with nothing and one person can be fulfilled with everything. Mm-hmm. You know, the experience of fulfillment is the same. It's just the data we have in order to interpret that fulfillment. Again, we're heading down an esoteric route. We'll bring ourselves back.
That's, you know, I really, that the, when you talked about the exchange of data with plants, and I've never heard it explained that way. I never even thought of it, right? That we breathe in oxygen and then we exhale the carbon dioxide and other stuff, and then they take in that carbon dioxide and they breathe out the oxygen. I mean, that's pretty, you know, the thought that kept coming to my mind as you were talking, Terry, was it's amazing how powerful our thoughts are.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're right, like everything around us is a creation that started in someone's head.
Yeah.
And when I think about that, it's just, you feel almost limitless in what you can accomplish, right? When you understand
Yeah.
Like ultimately, you're always creating. And I work with high school students writing English, mm-hmm. and I often will hear from them, oh, I can't write a story. I don't know. I just can't have no ideas. I'm like, you're creating stories in your head all the time. Yeah. you're always creating stuff, period, all the time. So we're just incredibly powerful and have no idea how powerful we are.
Do you know what? I think as humans, we tend to think that the entire world serves us.
Mm-hmm.
When literally I believe, and this is my own belief, this is not something I'm saying that is exactly it. I think as humans, we've been created to serve the world. Mm-hmm. I think the reason we have such high intelligence, the reason why we have such abilities is that we can literally move the world in any direction we choose to.
Mm-hmm.
However, we've just gotten lost in our way a little bit because we realize the power of our creation.
Mm.
You know, we realize what we can create and how we can serve ourselves. I think we just kind of we've almost embodied the energy of gods.
Mm.
You know, and I think it came about when we referred to God as he or man or being, or you know how they said God created man for, trying not to be politically incorrect here, but I'm just basically referring to scriptures that already exist. God created man in his vision.
Image, yeah.
In his image. I think we did it the other way around. I think we turned God into our image.
Mm.
And I think that's our mistake. And I think that's where we went wrong. Mm-hmm. We started seeing this entity or this energy, this source of creation as a version of ourselves.
Mm.
And as a result, I think it all went a little bit skew-if.
Yeah.
And so in my meditations, the things I connected to, when it got to that level, I started realizing, put simply, my life changed when I came upon a concept that was far greater than God.
Wow. Terry, we are out of time. Goodness, this has been a very enlightening conversation, and I'm so glad I had the opportunity to talk to you. Tell us where we can find you, Terry.
Okay, so just go to meditatethebook.com. And you'll find access to my book, Meditate. And I also offer a free meditation starter pack as well. So you can download that for free. There's a guided meditation, an introduction to the 5 steps, and also the introduction to my book is there as well. So you can get a little bit more understanding of meditation before diving all the way in. I also have an online course, which is very affordable. My idea is to get meditation in as many hands as possible and still also afford to eat. So I've got an online course which is available for just under $20. And it's a short course, 45 minutes, and it'll teach you all the basic steps to get you started. And you can also upgrade to the more advanced course, which is basically learning the techniques to transcend and hit higher states of awareness. Again, just go to meditatethebook.com and everything you need, you'll find access to there. And if you want to work with me personally, just email me and we can work something out.
Thank you so much, Terry. Yay! Meditation has become such an important part of my life in the last 10 years. When I first started studying energy healing, it is the number one tool I will go to calm myself, to unblock any clarity, to heal myself emotionally and physically. I think a lot of people they have an idea of what it's supposed to be, and if they cannot achieve the idea of it, in other words, they keep getting distracted and they can't sit still or whatever, they just kind of toss it aside. But as Terry was saying, it's not about having a blank mind and you're just kind of sitting in this, you know, euphoric state of blankness. That's not what meditation is. It really is about consciously creating your life. And I can't really even say enough about it. So, but he definitely is the expert here. So please check out his website and his social media, his book, and contact him if you want one-on-one training. And he also has his e-course. There's a lot of resources that he offers to really help you empower yourself through meditation. So also in the meantime, check out zazo.com, sign up for my newsletter, and you can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week when I talk to another fantastic guest. Bye-bye.